Cause Hulk Hogan, yeah,
I am the queen.
I'm the queen of the crop.
Badger to the world. Badger to the world.
Queen of the crop.
I am the queen. I'm the queen of the crop.
Badger to the world. Badger to the world.
Queen of the crop.
I am the queen.
Welcome back to the Movie Draft House. I'm your host, Mark, and joined by co-host Jeff.
What up, Mark? Happy Thursday. Welcome back into the House of Draft.
Happy Thursday in this Draft House to you as well.
Thank you.
Hey, before we get into what we watched this week, shout out to the music which you're going to plug.
That's right. I'm going to do that because this month's music is brought to us by Flipside and his song Cream of the Crop. You can listen to it on YouTube. You can check out more of his music at flipsidemusic.net. You can also look in the show notes and click those social links and let him know we sent you. And we just want to thank him for allowing us to use his music on the podcast this month, as it is wrestling month and it is a wrestling song.
That's the Randy Cream of the Crop, the Randy Savage mix. Yes. Oh yeah, brother. I don't actually know if that's what that guy says, but well,
oh yeah, yes. Brother generally is more associated with Hulk Hogan.
Okay, good. I'm so glad we
neither of which were in our movie this week. But were there pro wrestlers? I'll let you know.
I'm looking forward to the wrestling corner this week. Jeff, what do we watch?
Well, this week we watched Peanut Butter Falcon from 2019. As you may or may not know, it is wrestling, professional wrestling month here on the podcast. We're watching
not,
movies.
Not this fake-ass wrestling, right?
No, it's not fake-ass wrestling. So, Mark, last week, I have nothing. Let me say this. I have nothing to do with the show notes. I have handed all editing over to Mark. He has accepted that. As a matter of fact, I think he offered it, and I was like, cool. But along with that, I don't really get to say what goes in the show notes, and I don't see them until the show releases. And in last week's notes, he called it fake ass wrestling month. And I want you to defend that point. Defend that point.
Yes, I'm going to defend it because it's fake ass wrestling. You told me we're not picking real wrestling.
No,
we're not picking.
I didn't
this,
say that. I said we're not picking amateur wrestling.
What? I don't know the difference. All right.
Yeah, it's clear that you turn on the television, you see amateur wrestling, and then you see professional wrestling.
No, all right,
and you can't tell the difference.
No, I'm saying you say we can't pick amateur wrestling, and I'm like, okay, that one Foxcatcher movie, and you're like, yes, fuck that shit, we're not doing that.
Put that shit in the car. Well, listen, okay, couple things.
So
I do want to differentiate the two. No, it's not fake ass wrestling month. It's professional wrestling month. Okay. Use the proper terminology. Otherwise, I'm going to call some wrestling friends of mine. They're going to beat the shit out of you.
I hope you buy
that bluff. I don't know anyone that would do that for me.
But it'd be badass if you did, though.
And my response was, movies are faker than wrestling because they are. And yet, that doesn't keep you from enjoying movies.
Whenever
you watch a movie, you didn't say, hey, I just watched a fake-ass movie. Shit was fake. None of that shit actually happened. And the ending was predetermined, so therefore, there's no reason to watch it. How you go through life?
I just love that. I love that you've taken offense to the week-old synopsis.
What is funny about that is when people say that, what it really means is, oh, you didn't know that it was predetermined? And it's the term fake. If you said predetermined, we would have been fine. But if you, I need to send you a clip of Bill Maher saying fake wrestling when Roddy Piper was on the show and he showed all his bruises and scars from everything. Man, I'm going to jump ahead. In this movie we watched, Mick Foley is in this movie.
Yeah.
And you
Real
notice
wrestler.
One of his ears is completely gone. That happened in a wrestling ring. Professional wrestling that you say is fake.
Listen.
And he lost an ear doing it.
Listen, I'm not up on the today's like professional wrestling dynamic, but my favorite pro football team, the Jacksonville Jaguars, are owned by the Khan family.
Yes.
Which also own AEW.
Correct.
All right, and I saw a clip of Tony Khan, the younger Khan, owner of AEW, get, I guess, pile driven.
Yes.
And then he showed up to the NFL draft with a neck brace.
Yeah, because he was legitimately injured.
Listen, my worlds are crossing over here, okay?
Okay, which I'm fine with. But here's the thing, and that's what makes pro wrestling so special, is there's nothing else like it. There's nothing else that you could do. Like, if Jack Black were in a movie, and in that movie he broke his arm,
yeah,
the character broke his arm, you wouldn't see him walking around with a cast.
Okay.
And yet, that happens in wrestling because it's wholly unique. And there's nothing else like it. Nothing.
I'm you don't have to defend the fake ass wrestling to me, okay?
I'm not. Well, it's the fact that you insist on using that terminology. So you know what? Fuck Jared Leto. All right? Fuck Jared Leto. That guy sucks. He's a piece of shit. His music sucks. He's a fake ass actor.
Not his music. Not his music sucks.
Everything about that guy sucks. He's fake. He's a fake ass wrestler. Now, anyway. I don't know why I called him a wrestler. He's not a wrestler. He's not that cool. Anyway,
it'd be awesome actually if he was a wrestler.
He'd suck. He'd take it way too seriously. He'd suck. Anyway,
we watched Peanut Butter Falcon.
From 2019. Starring Dakota Johnson, Zach Gostigan, and Shia LaBeouf, as well as Bruce Dern, Thomas Hayden Church, and a brief, small appearance from John Bernthal, who you may know as as the Punisher. like, he's literally in one little flashback, and that's it. And like you said, it came out in 2019. It has many awards. That it is won. It also, none of which were Oscars. Interesting.
No. Yeah. This
is a little surprising.
Yeah. This one missed out. And I get it, but also I don't, because this is the type of movie that typically kind of eats up Oscar voters. But, this film's rather unique in the fact that it's directed by two people, and it's also written by the same two people. You don't often find that in cinema these days, is where it's written by two completely different people. Like, usually you get duo directors that are either like brothers or they're just longtime duo. And from what I could find, is that this film, directed by Tyler Nilsson and Michael Schwartz, they're kind of a pair, but they haven't really done much other things together. And so I found that interesting. And this is my second watch of this film, and so I just think it's a unique occurrence for these two people that haven't. They're not coupled, right? The Coen brothers and the Wachowskis. And
go back and listen to that month we dedicated to sibling directors,
right? But you typically get those directors that are coupled together. From what I could find, is that Tyler Nilsson and Michael Schwartz aren't coupled together, you know, for all of their films. And so I thought that was unique with this one. And Jeff, had you ever seen this?
No, I had heard about it, but I didn't really know anything about it. Like, it had showed up on Amazon Prime or whatever, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I think somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew that it had something to do with pro wrestling. But I honestly, looking at it, was like, it doesn't have enough to do with pro wrestling to get me to sit down and watch it.
And now, and ultimately, it doesn't really have enough to do with pro wrestling, but does it meet the theme?
I was going to lead into that. So based on what I said last week, I said professional wrestling needs to be a significant part of it. And what I really trimmed it down to is, and there needs to be at least one match.
Yeah.
And
we got that.
Well, we got that, right? So as far as I was concerned, it hit the theme.
Okay,
good. I do wish it was more pro wrestling-ish, but that being said, this is probably the best movie we're going to watch this month. Yeah. Although Iron Claw is out there, right?
Yeah, right. We haven't watched that yet. Yeah, we haven't seen that.
So, but to tip my hand, I loved this movie. I really enjoyed it. And I'm not a big Shia LaBeouf fan. I tend to be annoyed with him on screen. But I felt like he did a really great job of having a subdued performance of just kind of not letting the inner douchebag come out. And just really kind of, he had his little slight Southern draw he did. And I really liked him in this movie. And despite the plot being, I feel like I've heard this story before, not obviously with the pro wrestling edge, but the unwilling sort of guide who has someone annoying tagging along with them, eventually kind of befriending them and them meaning something to them. I can't place a movie that's done that right now, but I feel like that story I've heard before.
Yeah, it's so I was reading, so I watched this on Prime, and I'm almost certain you did too, which is interesting because it's going from Prime to Netflix, because I opened up Netflix, and I see Peanut Butter Falcon advertised, and I was like, oh shit, let me watch it. It's like, oh, coming Sunday, and I was like, what the fuck?
Oh.
and then I go to Prime, and it's like, oh, leaving in 4 days. I was like, okay, that makes sense. Prime... The description of the film says something about a Mark Twain-esque retelling of whatever this story is. And I thought about it. I was like, you know what? You know, I've read some Mark Twain stuff. I've seen some films based on Mark Twain stuff. I said, this kind of does resemble a Mark Twain type story of this adventure, these two characters on two vastly different characters on this adventure where they bond and they become close, and they're kind of just carefree, and I feel like that's what this movie was. It's we got a quick introduction to all the characters, and then we're off on this adventure, and I really felt like the adventure the adventure was at the forefront, but also took a back seat because I really felt that the film did a really good job of developing Shia LaBeouf's character without telling us a lot. You get flashbacks.
Kind of shitty, right?
Right, right. Right. The film doesn't make any. It doesn't shy away from introducing him as kind of a shitty guy, but then as we go through it and as he meets Zach's character, who also is named Zach in the film, then we start getting backstory from where we're not told, but we're not really shown, but it's alluded to that he killed his brother because he fell asleep at the wheel. And what's his face is his brother in this film, John Bernthal. And we get this kind of just this sense and feeling that Shia LaBeouf has this immense grief and guilt towards what happened with his brother. And then he's introduced to Zach, and that kind of, what plays out on screen is his kind of like taking in this guy and being like, hey, this is my brother now. And I really enjoy that aspect. It's because the film doesn't tell you that. The film doesn't spell it out for you. The film just assumes you're going to go along with it. And it's a really good adventure story to where you're like, I don't give a fuck. Let's go. And Shia LaBeouf is really good in this movie. I'm a big Shia LaBeouf fan. I'm documented here on the podcast saying that I like things that he's done. I think he's a really good actor. He's a performer. He's not a really good human being, but I've seen enough of his like interview stuff to where I'm like, okay, he's got demons, so I understand it. But here in this movie, he kind of like lays it out, and I just really felt like in an hour 30-minute movie, this did a really good job of telling the story.
Yeah. There's some cool, interesting facts here that I'm just kind of perusing on IMDb. Now, I think these might be Wikipedia style facts where maybe you need to fact check them, but
no, we don't do that here.
Yeah. Well, I don't anyway. Right. This one says the movie came out about because the directors met Zach Gostigan at a camp for disabled and non-disabled people, and he expressed his desire to be a movie star. So the directors wrote the script around him and Zach's hopes and dreams that bled into the script. And people they knew people would allow them to film for free and without permits because of this, the reason around it, which is interesting. I don't know if it's true. But then this other one that got me, which I think is really great, is Zach Gostigan ad-libbed the answer party when he was asked for the first time by Tyler what rule number one is. And that's awesome, because that's actually like the funniest part in the movie to me, when he just, what's rule number one? Party. I loved it. And then it just became a thing, right? Then like later on in the movie, they agree that rule number one is party. So I thought that was funny. But so this is Zach's debut, I guess, based on the tenuous facts that may or may not be true. I think he's really charismatic and entertaining in this. And obviously funny. I mean, if he's throwing out, he's ad-libbing party, I think he's done a great job for this being a debut role.
Yeah, and from what I remember leading up to this film's release was that this was the first, not big budget, because it's not a big budget, but...
No, it's an indie film.
Right, but it's the first time an actor with Down syndrome was given a leading role in a film. And then that could be wrong. I could be misremembering that.
No, but, well, I he's certainly up there, if right. not. But I do appreciate that we have a character with Down syndrome that's played by a person with Down syndrome. And, you know,
like it'd be hard to do otherwise.
Well, I mean, maybe, but I think if you look at movies like What's Eating Gilbert Grape or any of these other movies where there's a character with a disability, they always cast an actor to do it.
Sure.
And then that actor gets an award for doing it. And what would be better is if they did like they did in this movie and get someone who lives with that disability to play the role, because now you're getting representation. Because I think if anyone with Down syndrome watches this, they're going to really enjoy it, have a lot of hope that there can be representation for them in cinema, because there isn't any, you know. I mean, you look at what Peter Dinklage does for the little people community, and, you know, people take him seriously as an actor. And I think that, you know, what he would like to see is a lot of people be taken seriously, despite any other disabilities. So I'm really happy that they did this. I think it's a great first step And of course, it's an independent studio because the big budget ones wouldn't dare take the risk. But I love that about the movie because I think it, for someone with Down syndrome, seeing that sort of, you know, seeing someone like them on screen has got to be really, you know, nice. You know, yeah. I mean, us being straight white guys, we've always had movies with straight white guys on them. But if we had gone our whole lives seeing people of different ethnicities, what it would feel like to see someone like us on screen. So, yeah. And so it, after watching this, it actually kind of pisses me off about the older movies where, you know, actors play people with disabilities and then get awards for it when maybe they could hire someone.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Know. It's an interesting thought process to, or just a thought bubble of what if Hollywood in the 90s and early 2000s actually cast, you know, folks with disabilities in their films about folks with disabilities, and how different Hollywood might be today because of it. But I really think that this era of Hollywood where inclusion and diversity exist and is at the forefront, I really feel that Hollywood has been the best it's ever been, because you're getting films like Peanut Butter Falcon where it, I mean, you got 1A and 1B where 1A is Shia LaBeouf and 1B is an actor with Down syndrome. And both deliver really good performances. And you can tell that, like, Shia LaBeouf in this film is kind of just playing off of this actor, Zach, what's his name?
Gottsagen. I'm saying it wrong.
It's Gottsagen, but he's playing off like, you know, this actor Zach Gottsagen is delivering lines, and he may be ad-libbing lines. And you've got a very prominent actor in Hollywood in Shia LaBeouf playing off of him. And so that's really cool. That's a really cool, you know, idea to wrap your head around where, I mean, I'm not going to put Shia LaBeouf on the plane of like Tom Cruise or anything, but you know, Shia LaBeouf is a well-known name in Hollywood for the right or wrong reasons. He's well-known. And most of his films are really good. And I don't know if I've seen all of his films, but I've seen most of them, and the ones I've watched have been really good. And I know he's regarded as a good actor that just can't get out of his own way. But you know, you imagine Tom Cruise or Johnny Depp in his heyday, or you know, just one of these A-list actors, and that's I think where Shia LaBeouf was when like Transformers came out, and you know, he was on that ascension to A-list actor. You get a name like that and you put it in a film where the other main actor is a person with a disability, and that disability happens to be Down syndrome. It's because there's a stigma, I feel, with people with Down syndrome, is that they can't do the things that other people do is because they have whatever they have. I didn't want to say an extra chromosome because I didn't know those were correct, but I'm going to say it now. I'm pretty sure it's because they have an extra one. Not because
the guy who talks out of his ass, but
no, I just like thought about it. I was like, wait a minute, is it because they don't have enough or is it because they have too many? I don't know. Anyways, if you're still here, thanks for listening. But I feel that's really cool. I feel this movie is a really cool movie because it features so much of this actor, Zach Gottsagen. And how he's portrayed on screen. I mean, like, the film goes out of its way to like take the stigma of folks with Down syndrome and kind of turn it on its head. And that's really cool to me. It's because only once in a while do you get a film where it's about a disability or about an actor with a character with a disability, and then it takes that disability and kind of not makes fun of it, but just makes it this fairy tale type thing. And I'm specifically talking about towards the end of the film where they're in the wrestling match.
Oh, we'll get there.
Yeah, and I felt that it was a really cool moment. That should have been the end of the film to me. And you don't get that movie. You don't get this movie at all, ever. And you don't get an actor who is given the green light to be his authentic self. And I feel like that's what this guy, Zach Gossigan, was given. He was given the green light just to be himself. And because there's different scenes in this movie where I'm like, absolutely, he's not acting. And that's this man. And I thought that was really cool.
So let's talk about some wrestling. Yeah. So the whole point is that Zach wants to be a pro wrestler and he wants to go train under the tutelage of Saltwater Redneck, which is a hilarious wrestling name. From a bygone era, that would probably be true. Now, there's a video that Saltwater Redneck has promoting his wrestling company that he's training new wrestlers. And on that video is Ric Flair, and I guess he's supposed to be facing Saltwater Redneck, but anyone who knows wrestling knows that he's wrestling Magnum T.A., who is the guy in the cowboy boots on that scene. But those aren't the only wrestlers. That's just stock footage of Flair and Magnum T.A. So when he finally meets, I really, really liked Thomas Hayden Church in this, where, you know, he gets there and Thomas Hayden Church is sort of a run down, like washed up wrestler. You know, think of the wrestler from The Wrestler, where, you know, he's kind of things, you know, his career's over and things aren't going that hot. He lives in a little dumpy trailer and, you know, they come to the door and they see Zach, or he sees Zach, and he's like, you know, so sorry, you got to go. But then he puts on the garb, and you see him peeling out in his Corvette. And I first thought it was the bad guys that are in this movie coming to get him. I'm like, oh shit, here they come. And it was him. And, you know, and you just saw Zach light up to finally see him. And it's just a great moment.
Yeah. So I'm documented on the YouTube channel in my 5-minute reviews, saying that I love Thomas Hayden Church. I am down to watch anything that he's in because he's so charismatic in everything he does.
We've seen him in Killer Joe.
Yeah.
Which he's great in that. Yeah. But one of my favorite roles is actually playing Sandman in Spider-Man 3.
Yeah. No, he's like fantastic.
Their original vision was that it was just going to be Sandman, and they had the studios kind of forced Venom in. And I really wish it would have been just Sandman, because that part of the movie was excellent, you know. But yeah, I agree. Thomas Hayden Church, did you watch him when he was on Wings? Like, that's where I know him from. Like,
oh, no.
When I was younger, watching the show Wings.
I mean, I know the show, but I don't remember
and
him.
And he just kind of, I think he played a character named Lowell. I can't remember, but he was kind of this Bill and Ted sort of character. And now when I see him in things, it's totally different. I love watching him on screen.
Yeah, he's magnetic, and I'll watch anything Thomas Hayden Church does. But in this film, he shows up, and when they get to his door, and you know he's coming because like of the videotape that Zach has of him, and so you know that Thomas Hayden Church is going to be popping up at some point. But when he pops up, you're like, oh yeah, let's go. And he plays this washed up wrestler so well, but it's when he sees Zach, and he sees this kid's, I say kid loosely, but this guy's kind of just admiration for him where he's like, oh, I gotta put the costume back on. I gotta project, you know, my former self out there. And it's that moment when the movie kind of just takes on that like happy-go-lucky style, because up until that point where Zach and Shia LaBeouf are on this adventure to get to Saltwater Redneck, where everything is kind of, it's not serious, but it's dramatic. And then when they meet Saltwater Redneck, that's when it becomes this fairy tale type movie. And I really felt like that was a really good move by the writing and the directing, where things just, he shows up and like Thomas Hayden Church is kind of like the fairy godmother in this movie. You know, he just makes shit happen. He starts teaching. I don't know the actor's name. The guy that's with Thomas Hayden Church.
Oh, well, I'm glad you pointed him out.
Okay, good. You tell me
because
about
him. You do know him. Even the least ardent wrestling fan, which of you are, because yes, you're insulted, and that man standing behind Thomas Hayden Church would make you eat his fucking leg and beat the shit out of you because he's the real deal.
Correct.
That, my friend, was Jake the Snake Roberts.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I've heard of Jake the Snake.
Of course you have. He's fucking awesome.
Well, I mean, so like, so when our group of Shia LaBeouf and Zach and what's her face, Dakota Johnson, get to
Eleanor,
they get to Saltwater Redneck, and Jake the Snake's there. You know, that's when the movie just becomes this kind of otherworldly fun, and it doesn't. I did not enjoy the decision to interrupt the fun at the end with a dramatic piece, but I did enjoy the route once they got to Saltwater Redneck 2, when Zach is fighting Jake the Snake, which makes it even more better, is because now that I know that's Jake the Snake, the former wrestler, that's kind of cool, is because I grew up where I remember hearing about Jake the Snake, the wrestler, and so this guy being that guy, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. And he's awesome, and he's great in this movie. Like, you didn't even pick up that he was a wrestler. You know,
right.
He's just, oh, that's an actor.
Right.
Because he's honestly kind of playing himself a bit. I mean, Jake the Snake kind of looks like that. He dresses a little better, but that's about it. I love Jake Roberts. And if you want to watch a really good wrestling documentary, The Resurrection of Jake the Snake, here's a guy with a lot of demons, but he's got a really good story of bouncing back. So love Jake the Snake. And I was really like, I didn't know first off when I started watching, I'm like, I'm not sure this is going to hit the theme hard enough. I've discussed that it does. And I wasn't sure if we were going to get any pro wrestlers. And I just saw Jake Roberts standing in the background. I'm like, oh, hell yeah. And then he got lines, you know, and he was actually part of the movie. And I'm like, oh, fuck yeah. Whereas the other wrestler in this film is Mick Foley, who is the referee, and he doesn't have as many lines, but he was still nice to see.
He's more recognizable, I think.
Yeah, well, and he's more modern.
Yeah.
Right. I think Jake looks a lot different now than he used to, in his heyday anyway. You kind of have to kept up with him to recognize him. Whereas Mick Foley still kind of looks like Mick Foley. But yeah, I definitely, as the wrestling fan, marked out a little bit when they both popped up, but specifically for Jake Roberts, because I'm a big fan.
Yeah, so the whole crux of this movie is that Shia LaBeouf is on the run from John Hawks' character, Duncan.
For his own stupidity.
Yeah, no, right. He digs his own grave here. But
like, they kick his ass. And that would have been good enough, and he could walk away.
Yeah.
And they barely kick his ass. Like, barely.
Yeah.
They gently knock him over. But he decides to set fire to all their shit. And then, like, you find out that this fire has kind of gotten out of control. And I'm wondering who else's shit got destroyed.
Oh, yeah, no. For sure, the entire, like, warehouse of things was burned to the ground. But Shia LaBeouf goes around in his little John boat, and he steals crabs from other trappers' crab cages.
Traps.
And John Hawks' character, Duncan, is kind of the owner or the overseer of these crab traps. And what's interesting here is that his kind of right-hand man lackey, Rat Boy, is played by the rapper Yellow Wolf.
Yeah, I've never heard of that guy.
You really?
No, after about the year 2005, I didn't really keep up with hip hop.
No, I mean he's in the.
I know who Run the Jewels are.
Okay. In the realm of white hip hop artist, Yellow Wolf is a pretty big name. In this movie, he doesn't get he doesn't get any speaking lines. I don't remember.
He does. He's part of beating him up, and he's like, "We're gonna kill you next time," and some.
But it's nothing like gigantic. It's
no.
It's just he's in the movie. He's in the movie quite often, but you know he's kind of just the right hand man. John Hawks doesn't really even get speaking lines.
They're not in the movie much, and I think that's good.
Yeah.
Like you kind of mentioned at the end of the movie, it kind of gets serious. Like, and I'm with you. You're like, I wish it wouldn't have interrupted the fun. And that's a bit of a pet peeve for me, too. When a movie's really having fun. And I talked about it on our Nimona episode. The movie's having a lot of fun. And then it gets grim. Fortunately, this isn't grim for long. It's 2 to 3 minutes.
But it also does the cardinal sin, in my opinion, of the death fake out.
Really hated that.
And every time a movie does it. And I really can't name a film
We all know seen it before.
Yes. And it's frustrating is because this film didn't need that. It didn't need the fake out of Shia LaBeouf being killed by John Hawks, which is what we're shown to maybe have happened is that, you know, we're having fun.
And that would have been fine. Like if they had blacked out.
Yeah.
And then you just see them both driving down the road and they turn around and tap them. Hey, we're here. And that's what you got. I kind of would have been fine with that because it would have jumped right back into it. But they go to the trouble of playing the sad music, showing you Dakota.
Yeah, it's kind of a
crying in the hospital.
Yeah.
And him blowing out his candles alone.
Yeah.
For his birthday. And you're like, fuck, he's dead. Like they really hammer it home.
Yeah.
And then they pull the switch. I would have had they cut that part out, it would have been you would have been assuming he was dead.
Yeah.
And then that would have been on you. But the movie tells you he's dead in so many words, right? Because why is she going to cry? Hey, everything's fine. He's going to make a full recovery. It wasn't a happy cry.
Right. And so the fact that we go that and then at the end of the movie, and we're told that the goal is to make it to Florida. And at the end of the movie, it's Dakota Johnson's character driving a car with Zach in the passenger seat, and she points at something out the windshield, and we're shown it's the Welcome to Florida sign. That's fine. I am completely on board with that. But then we see Zach reach into the back seat and like reach down towards the floorboard and kind of shake something, and then we're shown it's Shia LaBeouf's character, and he's asleep, and he's got a bandage around his head. It's not needed. It's and that's this film is good. Don't get me wrong. I like this film. I think it's good. I think it's a good film. I just think it did something unnecessary for no particular reason. And it tried to draw the emotion out of you by force feeding an emotion. And throughout the rest of the film, we don't get that. We get the subtle emotion. We get the subtle emotion of Shia LaBeouf reminiscing his interactions with his brother through flashbacks because he's having these interactions with Zach now. And that's really good storytelling. And then we get the subtlety of Shia LaBeouf's character falling for Dakota Johnson. And they share a kiss, but it's a kiss that is meant to trick Dakota Johnson's character into being handcuffed to her steering wheel so Shia LaBeouf can go be with Zach in his wrestling debut. Everything else about this movie is fucking on the T to being a good film. And I just felt like the ending of over dramatics where, you know, it's like, hey, is he dead? Well, we want you to believe he's dead. Oh, he's dead. Now he's alive. And I'm just like, oh, that sucks. Is because it didn't need it. It's really like an unforced error of this film.
The way I would put it is the rest of the film feels very natural and effortless. Like you're just being told the story. You're just hanging out with the characters and that's what's going on. And then at the end of the movie, they try to pull some sort of amateur hour filmmaker stuff. Like this is the stuff to trick you emotionally and it hurt the film.
Yeah.
And I almost felt like maybe they didn't know what they wanted the ending to be. And they kind of tacked this part in. But had he won his wrestling match and everyone joined around him and it was a success and then they roll credits, I'd still be happy with that. And like I said, if they cut out that manipulation part and just had the bonk on the head, what happened? And then you see he's alive and you're relieved. That would have been fine. But it is kind of a blemish on an otherwise really wonderful movie.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed the wrestling match between Zach and Jake the Snake. And it's such a good callback to when Zach first meets the Saltwater Redneck. And Saltwater Redneck's like, hey, what do you want to know? What do you want me to show you, to teach you? And Zach's like, well, show me how you lifted the guy above your head.
There's a name of the move. I can't remember what it was, but
And you throw him out of the ring. And Thomas Hayden Church's character is just like, hey, I hate to break it to you, but that's fake, fake ass wrestling. And he's like, we did that with editing and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, what else do you want to know? And it kind of glosses over the fact that Zach was really interested in how that was done based off the VHS tape that he had been watching for, you know, an eternity. And then at the end of the movie, that's the thing. That's what the movie has built to is. And the film makes no bones about the production value of this stunt. It doesn't try to shy away from, hey, this
I love
fucking
it.
Jake the Snake's on some fucking crane and hooks and shit.
Yeah, he picks him up and then literally just tosses him a mile. Like they purposefully went for a campy part. And I loved it. You know, I kind of see why some people might not like it, but it felt right in the tone. When he picks him up and you're like, okay, that's still that could happen. And then he throws him like a mile away. Right. And then you're like, okay, that couldn't happen. That's ridiculous. And it added so much levity for them to then bonk Shia LaBeouf on the head and cut to him being dead in the hospital. And you're like, whoa, that's a hard right turn.
Yeah. But see, in the two scenes are like interwoven is because while Zach is lifting Jake the Snake above his head, we see John Hawks's character and Yellow Wolf's character running towards the ring where Zach and Jake the Snake are, but John Hawks' character has a tire iron in his hand. And we just see as Zach is throwing Jake the Snake out of the ring, John Hawks is essentially, you know, clubbing Shia LaBeouf in the head. And I don't know if there's this that big of a meaning, but you know, dramatically, it's like the culmination of Zach's character realizing that he's done the thing that he wants to do. He's always wanted to do. But Shia LaBeouf's character is meeting an end while also witnessing Zach, you know, accomplish this feat. I don't know. There's got to be some correlation between those two things. And I just think in probably better directors hand, and this, don't get me wrong, this film is good. These guys made a good film. I just feel like they fumbled the end and it doesn't ruin
well,
it.
Well, the ending is what you, aka leave the theater with.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the final taste in your mouth.
Yes.
And despite the rest of the film being pretty good, when you, like, if you're eating, oh man, what a great meal, and the dessert comes out and it's a cat turd, that's what you're going to remember.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it, like I said, it, outside of that, I love the movie. Like, if you just edit that out, it's great.
Yeah.
And I can easily recommend it, you know.
So film totality, do you recommend this one?
Oh yeah. It's still totally worth watching. It's really great. My only complaint is right at the end, but the rest of the movie is excellent.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat. Even with the ending and the overdramatics and just kind of the hard right turn, like you said, from going from whimsical fairy tale to, oh my God, he's dead. I still recommend it. This is one of, I think, Shia LaBeouf's best work.
I think it's the best acting I've seen him do.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how, like, I've seen the shitty ones, you know, like the Transformers and, the first one's not bad, but, and then like his Indiana Jones movie wasn't particularly great. And I didn't think he was great in either of them, but I did think he did a great job in this.
Yeah. No, it's a committed performance. It's an understated performance. It's a performance that I'm in 2019. He's, you know, this film's 5 years old now, but what?
Jeez.
Yeah.
It just makes me feel old.
Yeah. 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 We're old. But it's something that I feel like he felt like he had it. And I remember watching, and I can't think of where I saw the interview, but it was an interview with Shia LaBeouf, and I don't know who it was with, but he said something about this film where it was something that it had to do with him doing this film, agreeing to do this film based off the premise. And then when he saw Zach,
Zach.
Yep. Zach. When he saw this guy's kind of like, I guess, sizzle reel, he was like, absolutely. And then when he did the film, he knew that he had served a purpose. And that's really cool to think about to me, because like, here's a man that's really, he's got demons. And it's addiction demons. It's, you know, alcohol demons. It's just being a shitty person. And he agreed to do this film because he saw something in this person with Down syndrome. And then he did a film, and after they had wrapped filming, he was like, I just made something profound with this person with Down syndrome. And like, And when he was giving that interview, I was thinking, he's so good at, and I'm talking about Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
But he's so good at communicating his feelings of how things make him feel. And I just felt like, I felt not bad for Shia LaBeouf, but I felt this sense of like, kind of like sadness, sorrow, I don't know. But about the things that had happened to Shia LaBeouf in his life. And he's somebody that I think when it's all said and done, we look back on the career that Shia LaBeouf has had or had, we're gonna say, man, he was really great. And I firmly believe that. I firmly believe that Shia LaBeouf is a great actor. I just think he's been marred, and he's brought a lot of shit on himself to where he's kind of pigeonholed himself into indie roles that, you know, don't get seen or that won't allow him the commercial success that I think he deserves. But this film, 100%, I'm behind. He's great. Everything, and I'm not a Dakota Johnson fan either, and she's pretty good in this. And so we didn't even talk about Bruce Dern.
That's because he's not in the movie. I love Bruce Dern. All right.
Hey, when he's in the movie, he's really funny.
Right. Like, I think he does a great job. It was just nice to see him, but he's barely in the movie. That's why we didn't talk about him.
Yeah. No, it's no, this film's really good. Jeff, what are we watching next week?
All right. Take a deep breath. You're going to need it.
Yep.
So next week, we're going to watch the most wrestling. I'm calling this the most wrestling movie.
Okay.
We're going to watch Ready to Rumble from 2000. This movie was produced by, I mean, it was published by someone else, but it was produced by a wrestling company, WCW, in the height of wrestling's popularity. Like I said, it's Ready to Rumble, directed by Brian Robbins, starring David Arquette, Oliver Platt, Scott Kahn, Bill Goldberg, Rose McGowan, Diamond Dallas Page, Sting, Joe Pantoliano, Martin Landau, and a host of others.
Diamond Dallas Page.
Yeah, you know him from, was it Killer Joe he was in?
It may have been.
I think he was. He was like someone's crony and... No, wasn't it
I don't know.
I almost want to say it was that shitty Rob Zombie movie that you made us watch, but I'm not sure. But
House of a Thousand Corpses.
We didn't watch that. Death, the Fault, the Rejects, Devil's Rejects.
Yep. That's it.
That movie's horrible. Holy shit. Yeah, but we're going to watch this. Mark's going to hate it. That's my prediction. What do you think? Do you think you're going to like it or hate it?
I don't know. You know, before you had mentioned it, you know, a couple weeks ago when you picked it, I didn't know it exists. So I'm down to watch anything once.
Yeah, buddy.
I'm
excited.
Yeah. Anyways, you want to spiel the music one more time?
Sure. Be sure to check out Flipside. Then this, of course, their song, I don't do this every month like some, so I'm not as good at it, but their song Cream of the Crop, the Randy Savage remix, you can check out all their socials down in the description and, you know,
yeah,
give them a little love and check out their music.
Yeah. And if you want to check out the podcast on all your favorite social media platforms, be sure to hit up at Movie Draft House. We're on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, right here on YouTube where you're probably watching us. So don't forget to hit the subscribe button when it pops up so you don't miss any future content right here on the podcast. And if you want to follow Jeff on Twitter and tell him, hey, Jeff, you know, David Arquette's made plenty of bad movies. Why'd you pick this one? You can find him at Podcast by Jeff.
I picked it because it's wrestling. And I like David Arquette, to be honest.
He's always
Dewey, man.
He's forever Dewey.
Love Dewey.
Yep, he's forever Dewey.
Like, he's the best thing about the Scream franchise is Dewey. But if you want to get in touch with Mark, let's say you're a professional wrestler and you've spent your whole life pursuing this dream, And then you hear some numb nuts on a podcast call it fake ass wrestling. And you want to get in touch with them and let them know how you feel. You could do that on Twitter at I Heard You Liked.
Listen, nobody calls me numb nuts.
I'll call you numb nuts. It is like the least offensive.
That's true. That's thing. True.
Like, what? I didn't call you a dipshit or a dumbass. Yeah. Numb nuts.
Yeah, yeah. No,
what
it's
does
fine.
That
it's
even
a,
mean?
It's a very.
Do you have numb nuts? Oh, you took offense because you actually have numb nuts. I apologize.
That's more hurtful. anyways, catch us next week as we watch Ready to Rumble. What the fuck is it streaming on the Roku channel? Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, yeah, baby. I might just purchase it.
Jeff, any last words?
Party.
My moment of glory. I'm talking about.